Hi, Amber.
Hey, Patrick. How you doing?
It's a meaty pedal hub today.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Dorian Greeley, the executive director of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota, who shared with us some ideas about what they're working on, including
safe routes. What does it mean to have a safe route? What are the benefits of biking and walking? What is the mission of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota? And we're also going to talk about the Mayoral Active Transportation Caucus and getting more mayors to sign up. There's some good pedal hub action coming.
Let's get rolling.
Hashtag pedal hub.
Patrick,
Hi.
About the end of February.
Yeah.
And in Minnesota, we have a late legislative session starting this upcoming March. So that means it's time to talk state bike advocacy.
All right, let's do it.
So we have a guest joining us today, Dorian Greeley, who is the executive director with the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota, is going to share with us what they have happening and on their legislative agenda for 2016.
Nice to meet you, Dorian.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah.
I want to know about you. Tell me a little about you and your background, Dorian.
Well, before I was with the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota, I worked for a nonprofit called the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota for 12 years. And Parks and Trails is, I often described it as a mini nature conservancy for Minnesota's parks and trails. Before that, I worked for the Department of Natural Resources. But when the opportunity to start the Bicycle Alliance came up and there was immediate support from the bike industry in Minnesota, I volunteered to be one of the co-chairs of the steering committee that actually created the Bicycle Alliance. And here I am today because that steering committee hired me as the first executive director.
What is the best bike ride you've ever been on in your life?
Best bike ride? Well, you know what? I answer that question two ways.
Okay.
I tell people that I love to ride in downtown Minneapolis during rush hour because I'm not afraid. The other bike ride that I just totally love is I bought a house in Matamidi when the Gateway Trail was purchased. And when it was developed, I said, I'm going to ride to work on it every day. And I did for more than 25 years. Rode round trip on the Gateway Trail, made 3,000 trips. And you know what? I never got bored. So that was one of my favorite ones, but there's probably a couple more.
I like that you made it Minnesota specific.
Yeah.
You didn't tell us about your non-Minnesota. We'll talk about those another day when we're not here to talk about Minnesota.
Yeah.
Right?
I absolutely. Absolutely. I love the Mississippi River Trail, the state bikeway for my task out of the Iowa border, and I've ridden that many times.
Did the
times.
Whole thing?
Yeah.
Several times?
I've
More than
it
once.
Several times, yeah.
Okay.
I need to do that. That sounds great.
I know.
It is a beautiful ride, starting at Itasca and ending in the hills and bluffs along the Mississippi.
Why don't you tell us the mission of the Bicycle Alliance, Dorian? Like, what is the bicycle? Let's start there. Start with, well, what do you guys do?
The Bicycle Alliance is a statewide advocacy and education organization. When we were formed just 6 years ago, there really wasn't anybody going to the transportation committees and saying, we need more funding for bicycling and walking. And the other thing that happened was in the early 1990s, during one of the recessions, there was a statewide bike education program that disappeared during the budget cutting times in the early 1990s. And that was a program that the Department of Public Safety had developed and sent it out to schools and police departments. And we decided that it was high time that we had bike education back in our schools in Minnesota and available to adults that want it. We have worked really hard to create a network of volunteer instructors, and we worked with MnDOT and Blue Cross Blue Shield to create a curriculum called Walk Bike Fun, and are busily implementing that and training FIAD and health teachers to use it throughout the state.
So why do you think it's so important for Minnesota to walk and bike and have fun?
Well, there's so many reasons. I think it's a great way to build community,
yeah,
and it's a great way to get out and know your neighbors. But everybody can imagine there's great environmental benefits to not driving everywhere you go. There's fabulous health benefits. That is, I think, one of the biggest things that is driving our work right now and our partnerships with other organizations around the state.
You mentioned a little bit about community and getting to know your community. You all have done some stuff with bicycle-friendly community, is it a program with the League of American Bicyclists. And I think one of the benefits that people really discover when they go through that process are the economic benefits of having a bikeable and walkable place and allowing people to get there. Can you talk a little bit more about the bicycle-friendly community process and what you all do with communities in Minnesota?
Yeah, the bicycle-friendly community program was created by the League of American Bicyclists, a 130-year-old national organization. It's the concept that you can't just build it and hope that they will come. You need to talk about educating people to use your system. Obviously, engineering great facilities is an important part of that, but you have to teach people how to use it and encourage them to use it, enforce the laws fairly for everyone, set meaningful planning goals, and evaluate them to make sure that you are getting the participation in the system that you've built in your community. So the Bicycle Alliance has promoted that program throughout the state, and in the last 6 years, we've gone from one bicycle-friendly community to, I think, there's 17 now. And the last one was our first bicycle-friendly county. Hennepin County applied.
Yeah, a county. And it's like a range of communities, too, because the first one that you're referencing, if I recall, is Minneapolis. That was the very first bicycle-friendly community in Minnesota. And now it's the city of Richfield.
Right.
I just saw that. Yeah, they're making big improvements.
So suburban communities and really small rural communities in greater Minnesota, like, I want to say Fergus Falls?
Fergus Falls and Frazee
are
both bicycle-friendly communities. But you'd be surprised at, if you haven't been to Grand Marais in years, there's bike lanes everywhere. Grand Marais is a bike-friendly community. Winona, Mankato, Rochester was the first or second, bicycle-friendly community in the state. And Rochester is doing some, I think, some really great stuff because Rochester, is, as we all know, is going to try and do great expansion of business in their medical facilities and grow their population, grow their business. And they're downtown. They're not going to move the buildings. They're not going to move the sidewalks. And they need to figure out how to get 50,000 more people into downtown.
Right.
And bicycling and walking is going to play a big part of that.
You love Rochester.
I do love Rochester. We actually talked to Kelly Corbin of We Bike Rochester in an earlier episode.
Yeah, it's
good to see the developments that are happening there, too.
Yeah.
But all these communities, I think one of the things that's interesting about this, too, with the bicycle-friendly process, as you go through it, you build a network of people that support more bikeable and walkable places. And I think you all are doing something interesting this year. Help me with what you're referring to it as. Is it a mayoral caucus?
Right. It's called the Minnesota Mayoral Active Transportation Caucus. And we launched it just last week. And we have more than 25 mayors that have joined. And the idea is that those mayors are supporting the idea that transportation funding shouldn't just include roads and bridges. It should include active transportation or bicycling and walking also.
So have you seen a lot of momentum here? I mean, obviously it switched from one city to 17. As you welcome more people with this infrastructure and these bike lanes and bike paths, are they kind of taking up the cause and helping along with that too?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think one of the more exciting things about the first people to sign up for the mayoral caucus, many of them weren't among those 17 bike-friendly communities. And you'd think you'd get the usual suspects first. But we got a bunch of people who said, this is a really great idea. I support it. And mayors from International Falls to the Iowa border have signed up. And, of course, Grand Marais did sign up, but all the way to Worthington and Marshall. The whole message was that this is not just a Minneapolis or not just a Minneapolis and St. Paul thing. It is important all over the state.
How do people sign up, or how do they learn more about that?
There is a page on our website,
okay.
And the mayors can go there, and there's a really simple form that it links to. We really just want their name and contact information.
Okay.
That sounds like 30 days of biking.
Right.
Get name out there, and mayors, contact. And make the
right.
pledge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like
I think
that.
The mayors, along with, as Amber said, we have a bicycle advocates network
yeah.
and a bicycle educators network out there that we've built. And those mayors are going to be a wonderful complement to that as they learn more and more about what the advocates in their community are doing and what the educators in their community are doing.
How big are these networks that you've established?
Again, they're statewide.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily more than a couple people from the smaller communities, but we do conference calls every couple months to talk to them. And we feature a local advocacy project. And then we also talk about what's going on at the statewide level to make sure that they all know that the Bicycle Alliance and the advocacy role is really, we are their voice at the state capitol, and they're our voice at the local level, and they are our eyes and ears.
So at the state capitol this year, what do you all have going on?
One of our priorities is to create a state active transportation program, which would fund bicycling and walking in a very similar way that the federal government has done since 1992 when the late Congressman Oberstar created, it was called ICET then, the Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act, which allowed for states to get actually 10% more money if they spent it on enhancements of transportation corridors, which included bicycling and walking and other environmental and historical enhancements of those corridors. But that funding has paid for lots of trails and community street improvements all throughout the state. But that funding at the federal level keeps getting smaller, and we want to make sure that we can keep that momentum going. And there's great support among the legislatures and, of course, the mayors that we've talked about in creating that state-level funding program.
Can you give a couple examples of some of the transportation enhancement projects that have been implemented throughout the state?
Well, one of the first ones in the metro area was the restoration of the Stone Arch Bridge in the early 1990s. But other transportation enhancements projects, they've paid for a lot of trail improvements in partnership with the DNR and other trail agencies, and a lot of street improvements throughout the state.
Patrick, for those people that might not know what the Stone Arch Bridge is, can you tell us what your version or definition of the Stone Arch is?
The Stone Arch Bridge to me is a beautiful bridge that crosses the Mississippi River, and it's walkers and bikers, and there's a bike path right in the middle, and there's two walking paths on the either side of it, and you can look down and see an awesome waterfall.
Yeah, no cars. It's just a bridge exclusively for people.
Right, no cars whatsoever.
People-powered
vehicles.
Yeah.
And segways.
Those are probably not considered people-powered.
I don't know.
And it was built by the Great Northern Railroad before 1900 and sat empty for many years after they closed the depot in downtown Minneapolis.
Oh, okay.
So that was the reason. It was just sitting there doing nothing. And now it's really the one of the iconic pieces for the city of Minneapolis.
You see it so often in pictures. Like, I'm even thinking recently with the Winter Cycling Congress that was in town, like, that was one of the pictures that they showed was someone biking on the Stone Arch with the city skyline in the background.
Right. So we do have a couple other legislative agenda items that I'd like to share with you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
One of my favorite partnerships that the Bicycle Alliance has developed since we were formed is with a group called the Minnesotans for Healthy Kids, which is chaired by and organized by the American Heart Association. When I first went to visit them, they were mostly about healthy eating and FIAD programs and things like that. And I said, you know, wouldn't it be wonderful if Minnesota, which the federal money had only been able to fund 15% of the Safe Routes to School requests that had been made. Safe Routes to School was a national program that was created in the mid-2000s to complement the Transportation Enhancements Program that I mentioned before. The idea was, again, to change the behavior of the future generations to make them think that walking and bicycling is a safe thing and an easy thing to incorporate into your daily life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So anyway, the Minnesotans for Healthy Kids said, that is a great idea. We understand that this is a really important strategy for improving the health and the lifelong health of our generations to come.
Yeah.
So in 2012, the legislature actually created a Minnesota Safe Routes to School program.
And which is kind of unusual. I mean, there aren't many states that have safe routes to school programs at a state level dedicated.
Right. Yep. It was the first state that actually used discretionary money to create a safe routes to school program. Mm-hmm. So that was very exciting. And then in 2013 and 14, the legislature put some money into it. 2015, the legislature actually put some bonding money or capital investment money to do infrastructure-related projects, so sidewalks mm-hmm. and crosswalks and that kind of stuff near schools. And this year, again, in partnership with the Minnesotans for Healthy Kids and all those affiliated partners, we are asking the legislature to put $6 million in the capital investment for Safe Routes to School. The wonderful thing is the last couple of years, Governor Dayton has actually said the words Safe Routes to School in his State of the State address, and MnDOT has forwarded recommendations to the governor in support of Safe Routes to School. And the governor hasn't released his budget, so we don't know what his number is going to be, but the advocates are urging $6 million.
Can you define a safe route for us?
Well, I think it's also an easy and safe route. Which means that it is a place where you're comfortable sending your child off. So it probably means a sidewalk, a bike lane, or some sort of off-road trail facility to an elementary school. But it also means user-activated crosswalks. You know, in my school district, we don't even have a pedestrian facility that connects the sidewalks and the trail in the community to the high school facility mm-hmm. or the middle school facility. So you can't walk there without walking through the parking lot.
Ah. Yeah. I think the other thing that I would add to some of that is the infrastructure is one piece of that. The mm-hmm. other part of it is making sure that you have a route and it's identified and people know what it mm-hmm. is. And so they know that there are going to be other people out walking on it and or that they have some sort of programming that supports students safely walking and biking. So something like a walking school bus or a bike train, like those are other pieces that encourage students to not just walk alone, but also walk with the people that live near them and pick mm-hmm. up students along the way.
So that's actually what you mentioned earlier. It's not only a mix of, it's not only the infrastructure, you have to bring in the awareness too.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right. You have to make sure that if there's traffic, that the police are there to enforce the traffic regulations mm-hmm. and make sure that motor vehicles yield to pedestrians in the crosswalk. And mm-hmm. many communities in Minnesota and schools have done safe routes plans with funding from the Statewide Health Improvement Program mm-hmm. and funding from MnDOT. And I think that's the best way to identify safe routes and what the community-specific needs are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's done a really good job. Those plans do a really good job of identifying where it's safe, let's get kids walking, and where it's not safe, let's make it safe so that we can get kids walking.
I think this is all really powerful because we talk about with bike commuting, what makes it so life-changing for people is that it means you're putting exercise into your daily routine mm-hmm. and just putting it into a place where, that you would get to already. Mm-hmm. So like it's not exercise and healthy living is not something that you have to force into your life. Like it's not an extra hour every night.
It's not an add-on.
It's just your life. And if you do the same for kids and they're just getting to school and then you do it early, that early on, you make that behavior habitual and normal. That's a lifelong thing.
Yeah.
And again, the need is a statewide need that has been recognized. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned before, the federal funding has fallen far short. There were $100 million in requests in the first 5 or 6 or 7 years of the program, and only $15 million available to fund those requests. So $6 million would make a dent in that. It certainly wouldn't satisfy that need.
And this, what's interesting about all of that, too, is it does start to get into some other transportation land use issues, like school siting, for example, often comes up with this. And where are we siting our schools, and how is that either making it easier for students to walk and bike or creating additional challenges for students walking and biking. And so there are other things that you and some of your partners have gotten involved with around school siting as well.
Right. For years, schools were built in the center of town. And then because of parking and busing and all those kind of things, school siting requirements said you needed a lot more acreage than was convenient to accumulate in the middle of a small town or even certainly a big town. But more recently, those recommendations or requirements from the Department of Education have been changed back to saying, yes, you can do a school in a small town. But unfortunately, a school is a 20 to 50 year investment. So we're going to have to live and figure out what to do with all those schools that were built on the edges of small towns or actually between two towns that combined their school district where nobody can get there without a motor vehicle.
Unless they have a car.
Yeah.
I actually saw that, speaking of Rochester, in practice with the high school that I used to go to in Rochester, Lourdes. It used to be right in the center of town, and I could just walk to it from my house. Mm-hmm. And now they've moved it far outside of town, and now it's only drivable. It's a bummer to watch that happen.
One of the ways school districts are addressing that problem is they're dropping kids off with the bus, on nice days, of course, dropping the kids off with the bus a half mile away and giving them a half mile walk. And there's lots of research that shows that kids that are physically active before school are more focused and ready to learn. They've burned off all that crazy energy and they're ready to listen to the teacher.
Yeah. They're ready to be focused.
Yeah.
I do think that is like one of the benefits of even in rural communities having that remote drop-off. It's still possible to do some sort of safe route stuff and help kids get their wiggles out. And there are creative ways that people and communities throughout the state are figuring that out. And it's really kind of fun and promising to hear about those stories.
The other really fun thing is that hundreds of teachers throughout the state have been trained to use the Walk, Bike, Fun curriculum, and they're starting to implement it. And we had just a charming example of that during the Winter Cycling Congress when the Pillsbury School in Minneapolis brought 20 kids over to meet with the winter cycling advocates from all over the world or all over the Northern Hemisphere. And it was a really great experience. And then those kids were invited to be ride marshals on a winter bike ride.
Yep. I was there. They were kind of at the front and they were all like waiting for the ride to start. And they were like, do you know where we're going? I don't know where we're going. They were a little bit nervous. They didn't know if anybody else was going to lead the ride. It was kind of funny.
Those students to me are so amazing. I love the Pillsbury Pedal Power kids. Like, they're just a great group of kids. And that's actually, I think, one of the other things that's interesting about the Walk, Bike, Fun curriculum is that it doesn't necessarily have to be a PE program, but there are communities and schools that are figuring out different ways to get the message out and teach kids safe bicycling. And that's an after-school program where they work out, they have their own bike fleet. And I think bike fleets are a whole other thing we could ask you about. But they have their own bike fleet, and they go through and take these kids out and teach them how to ride and then go on rides with them and explore. Like last year, I loved them because you'll ask them like what their end of the year ride was, and they'll all be like, we rode to Wisconsin.
Some of the words that teachers occasionally send us the quotes from the kids after they've gone on that ride, and they bring tears to your eyes. They're so wonderful about how they felt empowered. They felt like they were flying. It was the best day of school ever. You know, that kind of stuff I thought was really, really precious. And, you know, the Pillsbury kids may not have been, they were a little worried riding with all these grown-ups in a big ride. But when the television cameras and microphones were put on them, they were totally confident that this was the right thing to be doing. And they spoke well of bicycling and how important it was to their lives. And I think that's, you know, gives you great hope for the future.
Yeah, future leaders in bikes.
Totally. Right. Well, and I think the other thing that's fascinating about them is it's not just that they're learning about bicycling, they're learning about their community and the world around them. Like, they know where to go in their community and how to be better connected with things that are happening around them. And they're learning about so much more than bicycling.
Right. Well, and speaking of the future, I think we have One more legislative agenda item that we need to
look at
share
you.
With you.
You got your stump speech there.
Before we go today, is a bunch of people were convened by the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and they were labeled the Bicycle Law Task Force. And their charge was to look at the laws, statutes, and manuals that have been created over the year for bicycle or bikeway design facilities. And what we found was there were still some rules on the books, which actually do have the force of state law, that were written in the 70s that just didn't make any sense. And so MnDOT is going to be taking those recommendations of the Bike Law Task Force to the legislature and saying, actually, just eliminate those rules. We don't need to set them in law. And let's make sure that the Bikeway Design Manual, which is available for the state and the cities and the counties to use when they're designing facilities, is updated on a more regular basis. Some of these rules dated back to the 1970s.
Yeah.
And they used words that we don't even know what they meant.
Which words?
Well, one was called a bicycle lane was called a recreational vehicle lane.
Oh.
Well, bicycles aren't recreational vehicles. They're transportation
to
some of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, and I think, a shift.
But the other thing that's interesting about that is part of the shift is also reflective of how quickly the landscape and the best practices are changing and evolving for bicycle infrastructure. Like, think back within the last 10 years. No one was talking about cycle tracks 10 years ago or protected bikeway facilities in street. And so to have these in statute, which can be much more challenging and difficult to change, refer to the design guidelines and guidance that we provide our MnDOT designers and engineers, and then other communities can certainly use them as well. But it doesn't restrict them in any way because there is something in statute that they're being asked to
follow. And the other important concept to share is that just in case you're worried that the rules that said MnDOT shall, where the task force thought things were really, really important, they said, well, let's put those in state statute and let's say MnDOT shall do and put that in state statute. But where the things are evolving so quickly, let's take that out of rule and put it in the design manual so it can be updated without a cumbersome process.
Yeah, there's also like a funny distinction between rule and statute. Too, as well, so that it becomes confusing, and this will clarify much of that, I think.
And make it the standard.
Absolutely. And again, I want to give a shout out to the Minnesota Mayoral Active Transportation Caucus, because they're going to help us do common sense kind of things like that. And I'm just so thankful to Mayor Ardell Brady from Rochester, Mayor Mary Hammond Rowland from Apple Valley, and Mayor Hank Ludtke from Frazee for being the co-chairs that actually sent a message out to all the mayors in Minnesota saying, join with us in supporting active transportation and bicycling and walking. One of my favorite stories to tell about those three mayors is Frazee has twice as many police bikes as they have police cars.
Whoa.
Two.
That's great.
Two.
Oh, wait. All right.
I loved your reaction, though, because
you knew. The statement still stands.
Yeah, right. Frazee's a town of 1,200 people.
Okay.
I think you're only because I've heard Dorian say that line before.
Yeah.
Maybe it's two police cars and four police bikes, but anyway.
It's two to one.
They have a commitment, and I think the commitment and what it means to a small town like Frazee is that it may be one of the keys to their future. Yeah. With the improved transportation and communication, people can live and businesses can locate almost anywhere they want to. So they want to locate where quality of life is great. And I'm sure you've probably talked about on the Pedal Hub before that young people want to live in a place where they don't need to depend on a car to get around.
Absolutely.
And I grew up in a small town. You don't need to depend on a car to get around in a small town. And a bicycle-friendly community designation is something that says your small town is safe and easy to get around in without a car.
Yeah, I think that's great. So you have other ways that people can get involved or learn more about some of this. And one of the items that you have for people to learn more is something at the end of March. Tell us what's happening at the end of March.
Right. Just like any other advocacy or nonprofit organization, or many other advocacy and nonprofit organizations, we have a day at the Capitol. And we call it the Minnesota Bike Summit on Capitol Hill, where we spend a couple hours talking about issues and hearing from some of our wonderful mayors and other political leaders and professionals about what the needs are out there and what the messaging is. And then we spend the afternoon going to see our legislators or even going to a transportation committee hearing or something else important like that. So you can register for that. It's a very simple website, bikemn.org.
There you go.
That's great.
That's your call to action.
Yeah. Join the Minnesota Bike Summit.
I say also call to action. Do you want people to contact their mayor and encourage them to sign up for the caucus?
Of course.
Do it.
Of course. Yes. Let your, you know, and what's really funny is that many of the bicycle friendly communities haven't signed up yet. So
you're pressuring them, yeah. Aren't you? This is your pressure to them. Why have you not signed up?
Well, they're really busy people, so I'm cutting them a little slack.
Way to loosen. Yeah.
Not too busy for bikes.
Mm. Right.
Let's make it happen.
And people can find out about the Active Transportation Caucus also
at bikemn.org.
Okay.
That's Rock great. On. Yeah. Sounds good. We've been talking to Doreen Grilley, the Executive Director of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. It's been really cool talking to you.
Yeah. Thanks, Dorian.
It's a pleasure to be here because it's fun to share what the Bicycle Alliance is up to and enlist some more support.
Yeah. And if people want to support some of the efforts that you're doing, they can find you at bikemn.org.
The Bicycle Alliance is a membership organization. You can show us your support by joining as a member.
Thanks, Dorian.